building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work. Hello, and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today, I talked to Patrick Thien, who is a best-selling author and founded a company in his 20s that hit the Inc. 500 list. A very impressive guy. We get into a bunch of different topics, from what differentiates a successful CEO to what he's learned about himself while coaching CEOs over multiple decades, to what CEOs need to do to build successful teams around them. He drops some really great advice, some of which I haven't heard before, so it's going to be really valuable for you. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Hi, Jackie. Delighted to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Okay, so probably where everyone starts, I want to start talking a little bit about the early days. You have started multiple companies and you landed on the Inc. 500 list. It sounds like really early in your career. You started your first company right out of college. Is that correct?
Well, you know, out of college, I'm from Singapore. So out of college, I went to the Singapore Armed Forces, did my 2 years there, and then I came back, did my master's, and then I went to work for Oracle. 2 years, 9 months later, started my first company.
Okay, so really, really young and very early to land on the Inc. 500 list. That is very cool. What do you think, even back then, differentiated you from other founders and other people that were starting companies at that time?
So I think that every founder needs to be lucky enough, because most of us at that young age don't know what the heck we don't know. Right. So we just need to be lucky enough. I think too much is given over to people think I'm smart, but actually I was really lucky. So we were building software for supply chain when the supply chain software market in the 90s was just white hot. So we built a transportation software thing and it worked well. And, you know, we kind of survived long enough to be successful. Frankly, I think we didn't know what we didn't know. You know, I think the first thing I would say is I had a lack of fear back then. I think a lot of people told me, this wouldn't work, that wouldn't work. And I'd be like, you know, bullshit. That, how do you know that won't work, right? So I would try things. So I think a lack of fear and a lack of what you don't think works, that really helps, actually. That really helps. And then having a goal, you know, like when I started my company, I said, hey, I want to be on the cover of something. And I wasn't specific enough. So I did get on the cover of traffic management. So I wasn't specific enough. And so I got on traffic management, which is actually very good for me because we were afraid management system, so it was the right magazine for me, but I also wanted to be on the Inc. 500 because, like, Inc. magazine, I mean, oh my gosh, that's for entrepreneurs, that was the it thing back then. So I would say we just grew, and I didn't really focus on that. I really focused on just winning my first customers and then making my customers happy, and it just kept growing from there.
That's amazing. You're very humble. I like that you start out with luck and kind of the amount of naivety to be successful. And fast forward, and now you've been coaching high-performing CEOs for, it looks like, a couple decades now.
Yes, yes. Okay. I've been very fortunate. So I sold my first company after 7 years. We hit about $25 million in sales in about 7 years, and I sold it. And then I kind of retired, but okay. I was like 33 on the golf course. I was thinking, I'm stupid. What am I doing here? I wasn't really retired. My dad kept getting on my butt for not working. So I knew I was going to go back to work. I just didn't know it would be that quick. So we went back to work. I began to realize that during this time of retirement, I was really helping entrepreneurs. People would call me, ask me for help. And I realized a few things. I realized, number one, that from the outside looking in, we were very successful. But from the inside out, we were running from crisis to crisis. And my own premise was that I didn't have strategy issues. I had execution issues. And execution is the inability to deliver, or lack of execution, I should say, is the inability to deliver on your commitments. Commitments you've made to your employees, your customers, your shareholders. If you can't deliver on those commitments, I don't care how good you think your execution is, it's probably not very good. I realized that a lot of entrepreneurs had the same challenges as me, and I just started helping them. And then as I started helping them more, I realized that I was really happy. So I realized, you know, Stephen Covey, he wrote a book called The Eighth Habit. And the Eighth Habit, he talks about your voice. And your voice is when you figure out what you're really called to do, and you that's your voice. So I just feel very fortunate that I discovered my voice, which was to help CEOs not fail, but to rather succeed and achieve their dreams. Because, you know, entrepreneurs, CEOs, presidents, it's a tough job. It really is. And the failure rate is much higher than the success rate. Mm-hmm. So that's my calling. That's what I do.
I love that. Well, you're talking to a lot of them right now. So I think we know how tough it is, and glad to hear your advice today. So I guess I have a two-part follow-up question, but I'll ask one at a time. So one is there a common thread that you see in the CEOs that you're coaching? Is there something common that leads them to success in coaching?
So I would say the common thread has to be a strong desire to learn, a strong desire to improve themselves, which therefore means you got to be humble enough to learn and willing to receive tough feedback. Mm-hmm. One of my clients came out of a really tough board meeting. His name's Michael. And I said, Michael, that's a really tough board meeting. I'm sorry, man. You okay? He said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, how can you be fine? I mean, they just shredded you. So it's okay. Tell me. I'm your buddy. Tell me. And he said, Patrick, you know, they gave me like a few key points that I must improve or I will fail. He said, I think I should be thankful. Like, they took a risk to give me that feedback, and I should just be thankful. They didn't shred me. They gave me feedback that I have to do to improve and win. So I'm really grateful. And now I know what I'm going to work on. So I would say, you know, Michael did not spend an iota of his energy being annoyed, pissed off, whatever, they ought to get me, you know, none of that. He literally went, you know what? I got to get better, man. And these guys just told me how. Oh, my God, I am so lucky. So I think that that's the thread that, because we all begin not knowing what we don't know. That's the biggest danger and the biggest bliss. I would say lots of things I achieved is because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to, so I got it done. But the second hand is you got to have both. You got to have the ego and determination drive to do that, but then you got to have the humility to say, yeah, you know what, thanks for sharing that, because I didn't know that. So I would say be very quick to seek the things that you don't know, learn about it, and ask for advice.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be really easy, especially when you're getting hard feedback like that, to get defensive or say it doesn't apply to you, even when you know deep down that it does, or even when you go to think about it and later you realize, oh, yes, you know, they were right, or that feedback really was good feedback. And then you have to kind of go and humble yourself and say, I should have taken that better. And sometimes I think these skills take time. And I think the ability to develop something like that is a great trait of a leader too.
The secret to do that is to not worry about it and to suspend judgment. The secret to do that is, no matter what someone says to you, you do not judge right there and then if it's useful or if it's right or wrong. You only say one thing, which is thank you. That's all you have to do. So somebody says, you're a terrible speaker, blah, 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 whatever. Thank you. That's all you're going to say, because right there and then you can't process it anyway. You should just take it in, write it down, and then later on tonight, go reflect on it. Maybe right, maybe wrong. But at that point of reception, you just want to receive it with a clean signal. You want to receive that and you want to store it. I'm sorry, I'm talking like a dirt engineer, but you kind of want to receive that signal cleanly and document the learning. And then you can decide later whether it was helpful or not. But don't do it around the spot. Because if you do it around the spot, I promise you, you will say something that you wish you hadn't.
Yep. Absolutely. And as we do a lot of soft skill development internally at my business, and that's something we work on with our team members too. So I love that you said that. All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
Okay, part two. As you have been coaching, and I find that as I work with team members, I learn a lot about myself too. How has doing this work changed you over time?
It has made me a lot more curious. Okay. And what I've learned is that, so in my new book, the Journey to CEO Success, there are seven key practices I share. The first practice is about curiosity. And I learned that being curious allowed me to really care to understand. So, you know, a lot of CEOs ask me, Patrick, you know, my team says I don't listen well enough. Can you teach me how to be a better listener? And so, yes, you know, lots of people have written all the books on active listening, eye contact, all that kind of good stuff, which I don't want to downplay. Yes, you should do all those things. But the one thing that if you do, you always listen, is if you can truly be curious and interested in what that person has to say. So that was one thing I learned was curiosity. And then along my journey, one of my CEOs said to me, said, Patrick, you know, I think there can be no good leader without emotional intelligence. I said, really? So for about 4 years, this is what my friend Jay said to me. And for about 4 years, I observed every CEO I met. And 4 years, it took me 4 years. And I came back to Jay and I said, I agree with you. I agree with you that every good leader needs emotional intelligence. If you don't have empathy, very hard to manage people. So those are some key things that has changed me and made me give more credit to the EQ side of the equation versus the IQ side of the equation.
As I have built my business over the last 12 years, the EQ side, I've realized how much more important that is too. And people don't talk about it enough either. And it's something that I think leaders should be talking about more and should be coaching people on more. So I love that you brought that up.
You know, I think it takes a lot of breaking down a lot of barriers to accept that. So, you know, I have an engineering degree. I have electrical engineering. I have a master's in electrical engineering. So I'm a very technical guy. I went to school to improve my IQ. I never went to school to improve my EQ. So it really pisses me off. It really does. When I first thought about that, I'm like, oh my God, my parents spent all this money educating me, getting my IQ up. And now you're telling me my career depends on my EQ? Like, right?
Why didn't anyone tell me this?
I should have minored in psychology or something, right? I should have done something on that side of the equation, which I really did not do. So everything I've learned is from me being keenly curious and observant. I'm a very observant person and I like to observe people and I like to ask, like, I'm wondering what motivated that person to do that. And I wonder what is it about this person I don't yet know.
Good. I love that. And I think that is a great question that we could all put into use. So we've talked about what makes CEOs successful. I want to talk a little bit about how to create success around them. You talk about daily and weekly rhythms that create success within a business. Tell me a little bit more about what that is.
Sure. You know, I think leaders, CEOs as well as non-CEOs, one of the most important things for us to do is to be consistent. And that's very hard to do if you think that you need to be innovative and creative and all this wonderful stuff. But yes, but you kind of have to be consistent as well. So I think that you put a set of rhythms around you so that you can be consistent. You can have some discipline so that the people that work for you and with you know what to expect. So the rhythms we put together would be your planning rhythms to make sure that your plans are consistent and you can cascade those goals down your organization. Then your weekly rhythm to make sure that you are spending enough time on the goals and how to make the right adjustments if something is going wrong. And then the last one I'd say is your one-on-ones. You got to have one-on-ones with your people. But the most important thing I would say is at least on a weekly basis, you should have a rhythm of reflection. You should figure out how the week went, what you did, what you're grateful for, what worked this week, and then what you're going to do next week so that you can plan your week well.
Yes, I like the reflection. And I think a lot of people miss that piece. I think it's really easy to just keep running, especially the high achievers that get into these leadership positions say, what's next, what's next, what's next? And we're not taking time to look back and say, see what we have achieved, yeah, what we could do better. That's that EQ piece. And that's where a lot of the learnings come in. Yeah. So I love that reflection piece.
As everyone grows from level to level to level, unfortunately, oftentimes what made them successful to get them to a certain place is not going to help them get to the next place. So they almost have to lose some of those habits. So for example, why a lot of entrepreneurs are successful is because initially you got to do stuff. You got to do stuff. But then you reach a certain point where you need to take some of the doing energy and turn that into thinking energy. And in fact, mm-hmm, if you start hiring a bunch of people, you start doing work for them, you get in their way. So literally the things that made you successful before, where you keep doing stuff, you almost need to be able to let go. That's hard to do. So those are kind of things that people need to learn.
Yes, I see that all the time where you are really good at doing and then you get into a leadership position. And sometimes it's a really hard transition to become that coach, that mentor, that leader, and get your hands out of the doing and get used to the delegating. That actually, you led perfectly into my last question. I was reading your article from last year, 5 Things I Wish Someone Told Me Before I Became a CEO, that you published on Medium. And in it, you said, as a CEO, your job is to think, and that you have a responsibility to hire people who can also think and not just do. I think that's a really powerful statement because a lot of people are looking to hire doers. And I think that they take the thinking away from team members. And then we have teams that kind of have this learned helplessness because we're telling them what to do so much. What do you think founders can do to both spot those people in the hiring process that are those thinkers, and then make sure that we're empowering them to do that thinking and not taking kind of that right and that skill away from them?
Yeah, I think during the interview process, you can listen to the answers they're giving you. You can tell whether they are articulate in the thinking process. First of all, do they have the raw skills to really be thinking? If they're giving you answers which are kind of amorphous, kind of, you know, then I can share with you that it may be difficult for them to be a very exact thinker. So that's one. Second is you can look at, when you ask them these questions, you can find out whether their propensity is always doing stuff. And so I would ask them questions like, whatever project they worked on, like, tell me how you did that. And as they describe their process, you identify whether or not there's any thinking space in there. That being said, once they join you, though, I think it's your responsibility now to give them the space to think. To say, hey, and I've done this. I've taken some of my employees and I've said, all right, I need you to slow down. I need you to spend an hour thinking about this before you do anything. And I said, and by the way, if you can't think of anything to think about, then I would like you to do nothing. Now, that's a strange request because if they are very strong doers, they can't think of anything to do. They go, well, I don't want to waste my time. Let me go do something. So I said, no, if you can't think of anything to think about, I just want to sit there and do nothing for an hour. That will begin to create the habit of thinking. So I call that time partitioning. It's like you've partitioned 2 hours to go think about something, and that's what you're going to do. You're not going to take that time and fill it with projects that are running over here. You're going to spend that hour or two that you've decided to think on that problem. And if you can't think of what to think about, don't fill it with something else. Just sit there, do nothing. And people are shocked when I say that. They're like, do nothing? I'm like, well, no, I'm not asking you to do nothing. I'd rather be thinking. But if you can't think, then do nothing. Because they literally have to quiet down, allow their brains to settle, and then they can think. If they don't do that, they'll keep failing at thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's why they say your best ideas come in the shower, because that's when you're out on a walk or whatever it may be, because that's when you're not your brain isn't running about work constantly. And then suddenly you're like, whoa, I have this idea, because you actually have the space to think.
That's right.
I think it is really hard to set that space for our doers that are constantly running. So yes, I love that you kind of set them up to have that space and quiet their mind. Okay. I think that's a great place to stop. I really appreciate your time and all of the wisdom that you shared today. And there will be links for everyone to check you and your new book out in the show notes. And for everyone listening, if you got value out of today's episode, please share it with one person that needs to hear these messages and share it on social. Feel free to tag us. We will share your posts. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you so much, Jackie.